lesbian pro athletes? I think Cheryl Swoops. What about Billie Jean King? When did she come out?
Martina Navratilova. I think a couple women in the WNBA. I don't know their names.
The general view seems to be that women who play sports are a lot more likely to be lesbian or something.
RCA used to give us enough trouble just about writing outright feminist songs. They sure didn't want us to write gay songs. Only you can decide. Take the self.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Delaware joins the U.S. Marriage Equality Club, Lesbian Athletes Out Since 81, and the deadly nightshade blooms anew. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Robert LeBlanc.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 11th, 2013. On December 7th, 1787, Delaware became the first of America's 13 revolutionary colonies to ratify the U.S. Constitution, earning its nickname as the First State. And on May 7th, 2013, Delaware became the 11th U.S. state, along with the District of Columbia, to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples. The Delaware House approved a marriage equality measure in April, and by a 12-9 vote on May 7th, the state Senate followed suit. Governor Jack Markell signed the bill into law less than an hour later. He explained that there were a lot of people who have been waiting for years or even decades for something like this to happen. I wasn't going to make them wait any longer. Same-gender couples will still have to wait until July 1st to legally tie the knot in Delaware. The bill reverses the state's 1996 law banning same-gender couples from marrying, upgrades the civil unions that were created there less than 2 years ago to civil marriage, and specifies that recognized relationships from jurisdictions outside Delaware will be treated as marriages under state law. It also guarantees that no religious individual will be forced to officiate at a same-gender couple's wedding. Senator Karen Peterson, who officially came out during debate, told her colleagues that, if my happiness somehow demeans or diminishes your marriage, you need to work on your marriage.
Marriage equality certainly seems to be on a roll in the United States. By the time you hear this newscast, Minnesota could have become the 12th U.S. state with marriage equality. The House approved a measure sponsored by out lesbian representative Karen Clark on May 9th by a 75-59 margin, mostly along party lines. A vote in the Minnesota Senate, which is also controlled by Democrats, was scheduled to take place as early as May 13th. Governor Mark Dayton promised to sign a marriage equality bill if it reached his desk. Minnesota voters rejected a proposed constitutional amendment last November that would have defined marriage as exclusively heterosexual. Meanwhile, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn is calling for a vote on a marriage equality bill in the state house. The measure has been stalled there since it passed in the Senate on Valentine's Day. Quinn told reporters late last week that, "I believe a majority exists to get this bill passed through the House onto my desk so I can sign it into law."
Andrew Lansley, the leader of Britain's House of Commons, told members of Parliament this week that the UK Marriage Same-Sex Couples Bill will be debated on May 20th and 21st. It will be the measure's third and final reading. A 225-vote majority approved the second reading in February. A committee then studied each provision of the bill. 15 of the 19 members approved all of them in a vote on March 12th. If the bill wins final passage in the House of Commons, it would go next to the House of Lords to begin a similar multi-stage process. If it passes there, both chambers would need to reconcile differences in their respective bills before a final version is sent to Queen Elizabeth II to formally make marriage equality the law of the land in England and Wales. Its proponents predict that wedding bells for lesbian and gay couples could begin ringing there sometime this summer. Scotland's parliament is also expected to consider a marriage equality bill around that same time. Northern Ireland's National Assembly soundly defeated a similar proposal last week.
Members of Australia's Greens, the only party down under to support marriage equality, are pushing for another vote on the issue ahead of general elections in September. Parliament defeated a bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples by a vote of 98-42 last September. Public opinion surveys consistently show overwhelming support for marriage equality in Australia. Greens MP and Deputy Leader Adam Bandt said that he wants another vote on June 6th and told reporters that it will ensure every MP's position is clear before the election. Uruguay, New Zealand, and France have each opened civil marriage to same-gender couples so far this year.
More than 35,000 people, however, have signed a petition opposing marriage equality in the Baltic nation of Estonia. The Foundation for the Protection of Family and Tradition gathered the signatures and says it will submit them to Parliament later this month to discourage any government proposals to legally recognize same-gender couples. When the Foundation launched the petition drive in March, it set a goal of 10,000 signatures, so its organizers expressed surprise that they got more than triple that amount. A leading Estonian intellectual called last month for the legal recognition of lesbian and gay couples. But a member of Estonia's main conservative political party told reporters soon thereafter that gay people are sick and deviant individuals who like it with animals. The former Soviet satellite is among 10 member states in the European Union that still refuse to provide any legal recognition to same-gender couples.
But a historic hate crimes bill passed this week in the Albanian parliament. Lawmakers amended the Balkan nation's criminal code to put hate crimes based on sexual orientation or gender identity on par with gender, race, color, ethnicity, language, political opinions, religious or philosophical beliefs, health status, genetic predisposition, or disability. The amended criminal code now enhances penalties for convictions of offenses committed against people based on any of those categories. Parliament in the predominantly Muslim nation also passed a new law punishing the dissemination of homophobic information through any means, including the internet, with a fine and up to 2 years in prison. Gaystar News reported that the landmark legislation was developed through a collaboration of Albania's LGBT organizations, Ministry of Justice, and the country's ombudsman, who hailed the laws as a revolution that put Albania in the forefront of the region on the issue. Some radical Islamic groups, who've used more than 30 Facebook pages to recommend ways to kill gay people, voiced their objection to the new laws. The website of the ombudsman was hacked by a group identifying itself as the Islamic Ghost Team.
And the persecution of a gay couple in the predominantly Christian Southern African nation of Zambia continues. Phil Mubiana and James Mumwasa, each 21 years old, were arrested in Nyandeke village in rural Zambia this week on charges of having sex against the order of nature. According to Amnesty International, they're the same two men who were arrested on the same charges in late April and released on bail on May 2nd. The Global Human Rights Group said that one of the men's neighbors reported them to police, leading to their rearrests on May 6th. The detained men reportedly have low literacy levels and a poor understanding of the Zambian legal system or their personal rights. The men were apparently held in an overcrowded cell without water or food for their first 12 hours behind bars. They were each subjected to scientifically discredited anal examinations to supposedly determine whether or not they had had sex with each other, and may have also been forced to make confessions to speed up the trial. Their next court appearance is scheduled for May 22nd.
Elsewhere, demonstrators were scheduled to gather outside an Auckland, New Zealand branch of global fast food giant McDonald's late this week to protest the treatment of a staff member who was told by his manager that he would be disciplined if he turned anybody else on the shift gay or acted gay during his shift. Sean Bailey said he had to call in sick just because I couldn't work with him, which meant I lost work hours and money. Demonstrators during the Turn McDonald's Gay Day planned to hold a kiss-in inside the restaurant and what organizers called a gay disco experience outside on the picket line. A spokesperson for McDonald's said that the company takes complaints of this nature very seriously. In this specific case, the restaurant followed internal processes, but due to privacy restrictions, we cannot discuss the outcome. According to Bailey, the manager was just transferred to another location, and he worries that there's nothing to stop him from doing the same thing somewhere else.
And finally, do you remember hearing about Roads Minister Duncan Gay in the Australian state of New South Wales? He was strongly criticized last month for removing Sydney's Rainbow Crossing, which had been painted on an intersection in the city's predominantly gay business district as part of the world-famous Mardi Gras celebration. Gay claimed that safety concerns prompted the removal. And wearing a rainbow tie, he made a surprise appearance in Sydney this week at the annual Glorias, the Gay and Lesbian Outrageous, Ridiculous, and Ignorant Comment Awards. The dubious distinctions have been awarded since 2010. Gay picked up a trophy following a boo-off at the ceremony. All the other winners won their categories through online voting. Conservative Herald Sun columnist Andrew Bolt captured the Media Category Award for writing that lesbians and gay men already have marriage equality because they're free to marry people of the opposite sex. Right-wing United Kingdom politician John Sullivan was among the international winners. His Facebook page likened LGBT activists to termites. And in the religion category, American Southern Baptist Convention President Reverend Fred Luter won a Gloria for linking marriage equality and LGBT rights to North Korea's recent nuclear threats.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 11th, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep This Way Out on the air at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Robert LeBlanc.
High-flying women return now that the lovers are winning. Later in the program. What have lesbian pro athletes been doing since 1981 that gay male athletes have not? This Way Out correspondent Michelle Marie Gilkison hit the streets to get the score.
On April 29, 2013, pro basketball player Jason Collins came out as gay in an open letter to be published in Sports Illustrated magazine. The 12-year NBA veteran wrote, "I didn't set out to be the first openly gay athlete playing in a major American team sport. But since I am, I'm happy to start the conversation. I wish I wasn't the kid in the classroom raising his hand and saying, I'm different. If I had my way, someone else would have already done this. Nobody has, which is why I'm raising my hand." The thing is, many women pro athletes have come out while playing their sports. Over a dozen tennis, basketball, soccer, golf, and volleyball players came out as lesbians between 1981 and 2013. In fact, WNBA star Brittany Griner openly discussed her sexuality with the media a few weeks before Collins released his coming out letter. As one ESPN reporter put it, Griner's acknowledging she's gay had the impact of a feather hitting the ground. Have you heard anything about the coming out of pro basketball player Jason Collins this week?
I heard a little bit about it, yeah. I think it's great that he came out. I think it showed a lot of bravery on his part, and yeah, I think it was a good decision.
I'm happy that he did. Support him and hope the rest of the NBA and fans do as well.
I don't really follow basketball, you said? I don't really follow basketball. I suppose it's part of a national trend of famous people coming out. And I guess once a certain number of people start doing it, you know, it encourages other people to do it as well.
I think it's great. I think it's about time. I think that more athletes will come out now. And I think that if all the athletes who are gay came out, it would change a lot. So I'm all for it. And I'm going to start watching him play. I hate basketball, but I'm going to start watching basketball now.
I've never heard of Jason Collins before. I'm sorry.
I think it's great. I support it. I support all of it.
Are you aware of any women athletes who've come out in the past as lesbian?
Actually, no.
I think so. I don't know them off the top of my head, but yeah.
No, actually, I'm not aware of any.
Martina Navratilova, a couple women in the WNBA. I don't know their names. Who else? And that was about it.
Lesbian pro athletes? I think Cheryl Swoops. What about Billie Jean King? When did she come out?
1981.
That was 81?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can you tell me your name and where you're from?
Matthew from San Rafael.
What do you think about the coverage that the Jason Collins story has gotten compared to the at least 16 lesbians who've come out since 1981?
Yeah, I guess now that you mention it, I saw like 6 articles or something on like the Jason Collins one on Yahoo, which did seem a bit excessive. Yeah, that's interesting.
Do you have any thoughts about why that coverage disparity might be that way?
I don't know. I guess maybe part of it would be, in general, like the NBA is more in the public's view, more in the public's eye than the WNBA. I don't think I could name any like WNBA players, although I also wouldn't have been able to name him before he came out. For one thing, I think just like not my view, but like the general view seems to be that women who play sports are a lot more likely to be lesbian or something. Like, I know that's the view in like the LPGA. Maybe that's why it's so much more shocking when a guy comes out. Yeah.
Ariel Carpenter, North Carolina. I go to CGU. There's probably no media attention for it, but I think that's how, in comparison from NBA to WNBA, I would expect that. I think for most Americans, when they think of female athletes, they don't think of femininity. So I think that's part of the issues at hand.
My name is Amanda Nonemer, and I'm from Arizona, from Claremont Graduate University. I think particularly currently there's a shifting paradigm of what is masculine and what is feminine, and there's certainly a lot of confusion within that. And so I think that people try to take sides and try to really develop an opinion and like take a stronger side than they may need to or may have in the past.
My name is Ian Hosang. I'm from Kingston, Jamaica. I am a senior at Pomona College studying economics. You know, I wasn't aware of that discrepancy, but maybe it could be because of I think people are more in general accepting of lesbians than gay men. So maybe that's a part of the reason. It could also be a part of the reason, the fact that men's sports are a lot more popular in terms of viewers and in terms of sports fans. So maybe the reaction is just greater because the basketball player is more popular. And men's basketball and men's sports is more popular.
Maureen, Studio City. I think it might have gotten, it might be getting less coverage because, you know, back then, you know, when Martina Navratilova came out, it was kind of a huge thing. And, you know, people were becoming more and more accepting of gay and lesbian people. So I think that the Jason Collins thing with the 24-hour news cycle, I think it just kind of flew by. I know an ESPN commentator made a very homophobic remark, and he said that, well, he can't be a Christian because he's gay, and there was some big thing over that. I think we expect male athletes to be macho and to be straight and to be strong, and people need to realize that there's gay men are some of the most macho men out there.
My name is Andrea, and I'm from Washington, D.C. I definitely think, I mean, we even discussed this in one of my sociology class, but I definitely think female athletes are, like, made more masculine, and in that case, it's like less surprising. I don't know. It's like the stereotypes being repeated.
My name is Muriel and I'm from Illinois. I mean, I just think it's a double standard because athleticism in general is associated with masculinity. So I guess being a homosexual is associated with femininity. So I think that's why it's harder for males to come out and feel comfortable as opposed to women, where it's more accepted for them to exert power through their sexuality like that.
My name is James McNulty. I'm from West Los Angeles. I think times have changed a little bit too, don't you think? 1980, I mean, it was a pretty unprecedented thing there for a female to come out like that. But I mean, people are more accepting these days. I think they're a little tougher on the males. I think because in sports, it's a masculine thing, it's a manly thing, and a lot of times we don't associate that with homosexuality. I mean, I was in the Marine Corps, and we had a few gay officers who never were able to come out, but were great leaders and great role models. So I've seen it in different areas. Yeah, I think this will really get things rolling. That's my opinion.
For This Way Out, this is Michelle Marie Gilbison.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
Thirty-eight years between albums? Not many bands live to see the day. Queer music heritage historian extraordinaire J.D. Doyle profiles this trailblazing comeback act then and now.
From 1975, the band The Deadly Nightshade is about to encourage you to keep on the sunny side.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view.
The band called The Deadly Nightshade formed in the early 1970s and were among the very first all-female bands signed to a major record label. They were the first of those bands whose music came from a feminist perspective. The members were Pam Brandt, Helen Hook, and Ann Bowen, and I'm pleased to share with you part of an interview I did with Pam. They had two LPs in 1975 and 1976, and now, 36 years later, have just released a new CD. But before we get to that, I wanted to hear about one of the band's early feminist songs. And from their first album, one of their best known and most anthemic ones was called High Flying Woman. That song's words had a message.
Well, words were very important to feminists back in those days. Well, like the word chick, you were also supposed to be a woman, not a girl if you were over a certain age. Chick was one of those words, which we really hated because, you know, as band people, it was okay for women to be in bands if they were just the chick singer for a male band. And, you know, what was considered inappropriate was for women to actually be the band, be the players. So the whole chick thing really rubbed us wrong. So that's what the whole song originally started out as. You're not a chick. You're a free-flying woman, a high-flying woman. You should set yourself free, take yourself for a glide. You're a high-flying woman.
Did you ever think that you lived in a cage? Did you ever think that you lived in a cage? Well, they're calling you a chick, and the name just seems to stick, and you still don't think you're living in a cage. Have you heard?
With much hindsight and acknowledging that the early 70s were very different times, how closeted would you say the band was?
Too closeted. Closeted enough that I rapidly grew ashamed of it. It was what was done at the time. I mean, there were real reasons in the mainstream music industry. RCA used to give us enough trouble just about writing outright feminist songs. They sure didn't want us to write gay songs.
I know the history of Deadly Nightshade is not over, but what do you consider your place in music history?
Well, we were not the first all-female band, which some people seem to think we were. But the Deadly Nightshade was the only all-female band signed to a mainstream major record label that recorded songs with explicit, outright feminist content, subject matter. And so I think that was important. And we were one of the first female bands. For us back in the day, it was considered inappropriate for young women like us, like we were then, to play in loud electric bands. Now, many more young women are playing in bands, thank heaven. But it's still considered inappropriate for old ladies to play in loud electric bands. So So that's really sort of like another reason we got back together, we thought. Huh, seems like it's time for us to have some more fun. And, you know, back then we behaved inappropriately. Now we're behaving inappropriately for different reasons. And I hope that we continue just sort of breaking down doors for the rest of our lives.
I mentioned that the new CD was their first in 36 years, so I wanted to hear about it.
It's a mix, like in the old days, of silly songs and serious songs, and of songs that are political and songs that are not explicitly political. And then there are 5 songs that are audio and video from the old days of the Deadly Nightshade.
The new CD is called Never Ever Gonna Stop, and I think they mean it. And one of those political songs from it is called Don't the Lovers Ever Win, and that song is also a first for them.
Right. That's actually the first song with outright gay subject matter that the Deadly Nightshade ever wrote or performed or recorded. It's a song about gay rights and the people who want to foil those, the oppressors and the homophobes. So the song was supposed to be gently ironic, Don't the Lovers Ever Win. It points out these things that people are trying to do to us and just asks the question, don't the lovers ever win?
You can find out more about the band at www.thedeadlynightshade.net and hear the rest of my interview with Pam Brandt at queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle, and you are listening to This Way Out.
Ever since it all began, men fight the other man. That's the way it's always been. Don't the lovers ever win? Don't the lovers ever win? Don't the lovers ever win? I heard a preacher
thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Robert LeBlanc, Michelle Marie Gilkison, and J.D. Doyle contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by grants from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the Ivana Foundation, and by listener contributions. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to read NewsWrap, check out our mugshots, pick up special offers, and more. You'll also find links there to our podcasts, blog, and Facebook page. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038 USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WHAV, Haverhill, Massachusetts, 7THE, Hobart, Tasmania, KRZA, Alamosa, Colorado, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all gonna stay tuned.